Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Americans' pensions are gone. Housing is down. 401ks are unreliable. But our Social Security system is totally funded for more than two decades. This according to our next guest. He is the co-author of the new book, Social Security Works, Why Social Security Isn't Going Broke and How Expanding It Will Help Us All. The book is written by Nancy Altman and Eric Kingston, and we welcome Eric Kingston to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What brought you and your co-author Nancy Altman to the subject?
There's a lot of public education needed about Social Security. The nation has a system that's worked and worked well for 80 years. Americans are extraordinarily favorable to the system, whether Tea Party, Union Household, Democrats, Republicans. Somewhere between 70 to 83% say, do not cut my system, my Social Security, and the vast majority of them are willing to see more revenues increase to both strengthen its financing, but also add to the system by expanding benefits.
So we
wanted to get that message out and also correct some of the myths, but mostly talk about Social Security as a solution to some of the nation's core problems.
Well, let's get to the myths, and the big one, of course, which is that Social Security is going broke, and when it comes time for us to take out our money, it won't be there.
Okay, good place to start. Social Security cannot go broke. It can have less money coming in than it needs, but it cannot go broke unless Americans are not working, ever. The system's, under the best estimates, able to meet all of its obligations to 2033. After that, it's 25 cents short on every dollar the American people have earned as benefits and have a right to receive in full. That is a problem we need to address, but it's not a cause for huge fear about the system. You know, Social Security is a little bit like our highway system. We take it for granted today. It's worked so seamlessly. Now, our systems, like our highway system, you know, occasionally there are bumps in the road. Well, with a highway system, there aren't people running out there saying, the sky is falling, we got to rip up the U.S. highway system. We fix it eventually. Social Security, there's some modest financing things that need to be addressed. But even if Congress did nothing, it would still be paying three-quarters of what's due. Obviously, that's not good enough.
So how do you make that better?
Well, there's a number of ways. If you're among the 94% of Americans who pay their payroll contributions into Social Security on all their earnings up to $118,500, you may not know that 6% of Americans do not pay contributions above that amount. If we asked Americans to make contributions on all their earnings, that in itself would address three-quarters of the shortfall or a little bit more. It's something that's very popular with the American people, and it's a very reasonable thing to do. There are also many other vehicles we can use to not only address this modest shortfall, but also to provide revenues to expand benefits. There could, again, match to benefit expansions. Americans are willing to provide a little bit more over time to receive a little more protection in their old age or in disability or if they die and leave young children.
As we mentioned in the introduction, as really as you indicate in the title of the book, of Social Security Works with an exclamation point, why do you believe that it is so often thought that the system is broken and that Social Security does not work? And that is often the narrative that we are given.
Absolutely correct. That is the narrative. And if I had heard the drumbeat for 40 years or 30 years or 20 years, if I was a 20-year-old, I would believe the system would not be there for me too. There's been a concerted effort to undermine confidence in Social Security, funded often by billionaires who basically want to shrink government, take the money that people have, reduce it, and force people to put more money into financial management, Wall Street, but also people who don't really like government. The system itself the American people, including the young, are very supportive of, but also the polling tells us that most people are not confident the system will be there. And there you have to back up. So it's reasonable because there's been this campaign. Years ago, when Social Security was first passed, people would say, this system is terrible. Alf Landon, who ran against Franklin Roosevelt, said it's a fraud on the working man. It's socialistic. It's a horrible idea. Well, by the 1950s, everybody, Democrat and Republican, was favorable. And the problem for people who want to diminish the system was to attack something that was very popular with the American people. So a new strategy emerges. Today, everybody loves Social Security, but some people say it won't be there. We have to fix it. And they've made this somewhat insulting approach to people, but insulting to me as someone who's over 55. Said, look, if you're over 55, don't worry, we're not going to hurt you. But if you're under 55, you're not going to get Social Security anyway, or not much. So we're going to fix it. And the way they fix it is to rob the benefits from the young, effectively. The people who have the greatest stake in strengthening the system financially and in expanding it are young people. People underage, young in the sense of under 65, people in their 50s, 40s. We know today that roughly two-thirds of working Americans will not be able to maintain their standard of living. Two-thirds of people under 65 will not be able to maintain their standard of living in retirement, even if they work to age 65. We have a real crisis for the American public in the lack of support, lack of protection, because a number of things happen. We've lost equity in our homes. Some people have lost homes. We haven't seen wage growth for many years for most households. We've seen student debt go up. We've seen parents mortgaging their houses to help students go through school. We've seen health care costs go up. The economy nearly collapsed. The one thing that stood strong for 80 years throughout all these problems is Social Security. No one had to worry about it. It's core. That doesn't mean we don't have to make changes to it. It's just not something that's going to fall apart. But if you want to pull it apart, you argue this system isn't sound. It's not something we can afford. We love the system, but we can't afford it.
One of the things that you talk about in the book, which I think is interesting, is you make the point that Social Security is insurance, not savings. And this is in answer to the question of that you could do better investing on your own. So in some ways, you're saying that it is supplemental.
Well, it was certainly intended to be the foundation of retirement income security. We used to talk about something called a three-legged stool: Social Security, private pensions, and savings.
Right.
Today, we have more of a pogo stick. We have Social Security. Pension funds, the traditional pension plans, are almost a thing of the past, except in public service and a couple of industries. The 401k system is a failure in terms of retirement income security. Of course, it's good to have retirement savings, but the average American household has just $3,000. Even among those who have retirement income savings, even the top 20%, they only had around 55 to 75. They only have about $100,000, $110,000. Our private retirement system has not done the job, and Social Security does do the job. Joe, would you go back to that question, though?
Sure.
I think I got ahead of myself here.
No, it's fine. Actually, I'm going to ask you a follow-up to the question, which is, I think many people will be surprised to hear you say that 401ks, 403bs, and the like are a failure.
They're a failure in that they don't provide the kind of security. Again, to go back to this notion of Social Security as insurance, Social Security is wage insurance. You can't save at the age of 27, say, if you have a young kid. You can't save enough to put money away if you die and leave a young child. Social Security provides the life insurance, which is the core protection of young children through age 18. You can't save if you're a 20-year-old and you don't think you're going to be disabled, but we estimate that 1 in 4 will receive disability benefits at some point in their life. You can't save enough for that if disability strikes at 32. You need insurance. You can't save if your house burns down, parallel here. In fear of that, you don't set up a savings account. You buy insurance. Same for wage insurance. If we lose wages, we need protection. Social Security provides that through a mechanism that's conservatively organized and managed, very efficient. Less than 1 cent in every dollar is spent on administration. 99 cents of every dollar collected goes out in benefits, ultimately. So that would be that. And then the 401k system, to go back to that part of the question.
Yes.
For the vast majority of people, it's not bad to have savings. It's a good thing to have savings. I'm not arguing against savings or pension savings either, but the system does not provide widespread protection. It primarily protects the highest income, and even they are not well protected because this is a savings plan. And if, let's say, you retired in 2008, all of a sudden your savings in your 401k drop dramatically, plus you're in a period after that where interest rates are only 1%, 2% returns on your whatever amount you have. For the vast majority of Americans, they don't have this, but even if you do, you're not well protected.
So when it comes to where your optimism lies in the future of Social Security, it would be what?
It's that if you get the debate of Social Security outside of Washington, the American people are united that they don't want to see the program cut and they favor a judicious expansion. The optimism is that increasing numbers of members of Congress are stepping forward and putting ideas out about expanding benefits in our own state, New York State. And another piece of the optimism is, take New York State, 3.5 million people receive benefits every month. They don't have to worry about their Social Security. They get it, and the rest are pretty well insured if you're working. The optimism is that the belief that the only reasonable thing that's out there to do in addressing the retirement income crisis is to talk about a judicious expansion of Social Security. The other piece of optimism is we are the richest nation in the world, but we spend half of what other industrialized capitalist nations spend on their survivors' retirement and disability program. Germany, France, Austria, most of the industrial nations spend twice as much as of their GDP, of everything they produce, on their equivalent to Social Security. We are not poor. We feel poor because in the last 30 years, we've seen that for the vast majority of people, wages have not gone up. From 1949 to 1979, the wage growth in our economy, two-thirds of the wage growth went to the bottom 90%. Since that time, nothing has gone to the bottom 90%. It's all gone to the top 10%. And in fact, there's been a loss in the bottom 90% that's also gone to the top 10. They've lost about 15% of aggregate income. So something's wrong with the way our economy is functioning, with the decisions we make. The optimism comes from the belief that as the American public learns more about the system, more about what needs to be done, we'll see more support. It has worked, by the way. The attempt for a number of years in Washington was to come up with some grand bargain, and in the grand bargain, even though Social Security doesn't contribute a penny to the federal deficit or debt, in the grand bargain, they were going to cut Social Security anyway. Well, as Americans heard about that and as more voices came into Washington, they moved away from cutting the annual cost of living adjustment, which was what the plan was, and many other pieces of Social Security. So as long as Social Security's future isn't discussed behind closed doors, I feel good about it. We see an increasing number of members. As I mentioned, Senator Brown, for instance, is about to drop a bill which would expand benefits pretty much across the board, raise the payroll tax contribution, and also develop a better COLA. I think that's the rough outline. Senator Harkin had done that previously, and Senator Brown works with him. We have Senator Hirono yesterday who dropped a bill. So we're getting these bills out and this idea out that our Social Security system is a solution that our Social Security system, of course it needs to be well financed, but financing is not the purpose of the system. The purpose is to protect the American public, to provide broad protection against lost wages. And it builds on core values, values that we hold in religion and moral values, that this system gives expression to the idea we have responsibility to care for our parents, our children, our family, and ourselves. We have a responsibility to work hard, and if we work hard, we have a right to a decent standard of living in retirement or other circumstances, and we believe in human dignity. So I think we have a system that gives the best expression to our values as a society, and I think that Americans like this system, one, because it protects them, two, because it's a positive use of government. It's something they believe in as a system.
Well, the name of the book is Social Security Works, Why Social Security Isn't Going Broke, and How Expanding It Will Help Us All. The book is published by The New Press. It is written by Nancy Altman and Eric Kingson. Eric, thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thank you, Joe.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Again, the name of the book is Social Security Works. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.